Mr. Addington, real one. Where were you born, Mr. Addington?
Well, now, this is a rather an awkward story, this, you see. My real birthplace was Pine Lodge, Long Beach, California.
So, were your parents American?
My father was English and my mother was Irish. And my mother died at birth. And I'm supposed to have four or five sisters. I think it's five sisters in America. But over the years elapsed, I've tried to trace everybody and what have you, but no luck at all, you see.
What did your father do for a living?
He was a land agent. He used to sell land and what have you. And he died in 1933.
So he went back to Britain, did he?
Yes. And my dad dying, I was married to a stepmother. I had a stepmother, but things wasn't working out as I wanted them to. So I joined the army on the 1st of July 1935.
That was just to get away from home?
That was to get away from home, yeah.
And you joined the artillery, did you?
Yes, the Royal Artillery, 19th Field Regiment at Borden, Hants.
Why did you decide to go into the gunners?
Well, the chappie who was interviewing me, the sergeant who was interviewing me, was in the Royal Artillery, you see. And I suppose he more or less conned me into the RA.
Now, jumping ahead to the Second World War, can you tell me what unit you were in when, in 1944, you went into Europe at Dunkirk?
I was in the 1st Mountain Regiment, Royal Artillery, attached to the 52nd Highland Division.
And what rank did you hold at the time?
I hold the rank at the time as gunner.
So, were you manning a gun?
A man in a gun, yes.
What kind of a gun were you manning?
We was on the pack. It was called a pack. 18-pound a pack gun, you see. And then, on arrival, we got the new guns that Montgomery had in the desert, the 18-pounders. We come off the 18-pounders and went on to the 25-pounders. That was it.
Now, do you know the dates that you went into Dunkirk, approximately?
It was about D plus six.
And what did you go across on?
We ferried over, and then, I forget the name of the boat we was on, but we put in the landing craft, and we disembarked on landing craft at Dunkirk.
Was there any enemy opposition?
No, not at the moment when we landed, no. I think things were a bit quiet then.
Was there any sign of the enemy at all?
Oh yes, we heard the gunfire and the shelling in the distance, naturally.
And what was the scene when you landed?
Well, everything disarrayed. Everything is smouldering, smoke and what have you, and everybody flying about, and we just followed the jeep in front of us and carried on, you see.
You actually landed on a beach, did you?
Oh yes, Dunkirk, yes.
On a sandy beach?
It was sandy at the time, yes, with a few pebbles here and there.
And how many troops were going in at the time?
Well, he was the whole regiment at the time, you see. Following, I forget where I was. About three or four batteries landed, not together, one battery at a time, you see. That would be one gun.
And did you land with infantry as well?
Yes, we landed with the Highland Light Infantry, HLI. And I think the South Wales Baldridge was with us. The Swabs, we used to call them the Swabs.
Were you nervous when you went in?
Yes. I should imagine every man is.
So you must have been relieved when you found that there was no enemy opposition.
Yes, we were relieved, actually. Because on the way over, we was debating, what's it going to be like? If it's going to be anything, let's get hit and get it over with. But it's a funny feeling when you go into battle.
Was there much problem with mines or barbed wire defences, anything of that kind?
Oh, the barbed wire and all what have you had been cleared for us. They'd been cut by the Royal Engineers.
So once you landed, what happened then?
Well, we carried on. We had to keep moving in case of shelling, you see. We just followed the CO and his jeep. And we carried on to a dispersal point. And then after that, we was all grouped together. And we was given our orders of what was going to happen, you see.
What were those orders? Can you remember?
Those orders were... We were going through into Ghent, a place called Ghent. We had to take Ghent, G-H-E-N-T. And there, we joined up with the 4th Marine Commandos, as we were the supporting artillery for them.
Was there much fighting in the taking of Ghent?
Yes. We understand there was the guards were there, had gone in first. Everything was happening so quick that we took the place of Ghent. Then went on to another place called Bruges or something. Bruges.
Did you fire many rounds?
Oh, yes. Yes. We gave cover for the commandos. Yes.
And did you have any incoming fire?
No, we had occasional mortar fire from the Jerry.
Did it cause any casualties?
Not on our side, no, not on our side, not so much. There's mainly a few commandos got hit.
What was your particular job on the 25 pounder?
I was the loader.
What did you think of the calibre of the German opposition?
Very good. Especially when you spotted a Tiger tank coming at you.
Did that happen very often?
Only a couple of times during our entrance through... We're coming out now. Let's carry on a bit. We're coming out now of Belgium. We're going into Holland.
What was it like when the Tiger tanks came towards you?
Well, we knew from past history that none of our shells could touch them because there was very thick armour plated. The only thing is, what we could do was to get these so-called bazookas, it was called bazookas, and aim at the tracks. If we could dislodge the track off of them, they was... Has mobilised then, you see.
Did you have bazookas?
Yes, one every six of us had a bazooka.
Did you personally have one?
Yes, I had one actually.
What were they like to fire?
It was okay to fire, but when you first fire one, the recoil of them is terrific and knock you back with them, and knock you back about a yard. And a very frightening thing to use if you're not used to them.
So did you disable any Tigers?
Not to my knowledge, no. But I had a good go at it.
So what happened to your shots? Did they hit the tank?
Oh, they just hit and rebounded off. I mean, there's such a damn good tank that nothing could touch the Tiger.
So you just had to hit it in one particular place?
Yeah, you always had to aim for the track. You say, dislodge the track, and then he had it, more or less. He just goes around in a circle and then on one track.
Did you actually see that happen?
Oh, quite a few times, yes, quite a few times. And once they'd done that, you see, they used to run up to them on the blind side of the tank and try to open the porthole and throw a grenade in it. You can imagine the rest of that.
Did you actually see that happen?
Oh, yes, many a time, yes, many a time. Many a time.
Did the crew of the tank ever jump out to surrender?
Oh, yes, yes, always. I mean, they had to. I mean, most of them, some of them, poor devils, there was a light. Well, the uniform was a light. They used to jump out and lay groaning and shouting and rolling over to get the flames distinguished, you see. Then they was taken prisoner.
So you pushed on through Belgium into the Netherlands?
Yes, we came through, and the next big battle was at Nijmegen Bridge. That was the Arnhem landing.
What did you have to do with that?
Well, we was the other side of the river, the Nijmegen. Fourth commanders, ourselves, was trying to give strength and help to the Arnhem landing, which we all went wrong, as you know, in history, to relieve our boys on the bridge to come over, you see.
And what was the actual fighting that you personally saw at Nijmegen?
Well, at Nijmegen was to get rid of the guards over the other side of the bridge, so as we could all go over and more or less relieve the boys at Arnhem, or the few stragglers. I mean, it's such a big landing that, well, everything was going so big that we had no idea what was happening ourselves. All it was in them days was to look after yourself. Because we wasn't given no full instructions. We never knew what was going to hit us next. We didn't really know. We had to act on our own initiative.
How much of the enemy did you actually see at Nijmegen?
At Nijmegen, well, quite a few actually, because the first enemy to come on that was prisoners of war coming over, you see, which the airborne brought over towards us. But the actual enemy fighting, no. Because it was a very discreet move, it was there.
What did the POWs look like?
Well, youngsters. We were very surprised how young the force was there. Very, very young.
What kind of age?
I should imagine some old man, he looked about 17 kids. We just couldn't believe it.
What kind of condition were they in?
Well, a very ragged condition. They looked very hungry to me, personally.
Did they seem frightened or defiant? Or?
Oh, yes, for all of them. Very white-faced and disabled. The attitude of they couldn't care less.
You mean demoralised?
Demoralised, definitely demoralised, yeah.
What you said that the Germans fought well. In what way did they fight well?
Well, that was regarding, on going back to the Tiger tank business, that they was very well equipped. And their Spandus, very good machine gun. They was good fighters, as regarding, but not the people who surrendered, but the actual, must have been first class troops there sent into Arnhem. But the ones that are captured, I mean, I couldn't tell what unit they belonged to, or just there might have been a few stragglers, I couldn't say.
In what kind of numbers were they?
Well, the first, it must have been well over 100, the first drove that come in.
Were many of them casualties?
Yeah, there was a few limping, a few bandaged up on the forehead and what have you.
Did they surrender easily, the Germans, or not?
Well, they had already surrendered, you see, because the people who was behind them was the Americans that had them, got them, you see, and a few of our boys were there.
But, I mean, in general, did the Germans you were fighting against surrender easily, or did they fight bitterly?
Well, some, it's all according to the individual. I mean, if you saw him, I mean, you couldn't say, is he fighting? Well, particularly you saw the Jerry, you'd shoot at him. But you'd never see the same Jerry twice, if you get my meaning.
What did you think to the allies that you're fighting with, like the Americans?
Well, it's a long story, really. I mean, the battle of some units that was with us was very good. But like everything else, there was nothing like their own unit to be with, because they had different tactics. They used to fight different tactics to our people, to us, what we was trained to do.
In what way was it?
Well, very slovenly, and they couldn't take orders. There's no discipline in the American Army.
Can you give some examples?
Well, hi, Mac. I mean, you wouldn't go up to our colonel and say, hi, Mac, how are you going? You got a cigar, wouldn't you? I mean, it's ridiculous. I mean, we're trained. We're regular soldiers. We're trained to take orders. Not all that rubbish.
But in what way were they slovenly?
Well, when you can't compare an American soldier, really, to an English soldier. I mean, we're disciplined. Regards Martin and carrying our weapons, they're all, they dress. I mean, some of them was in trilby hats and bow ties, all this rubbish. It was ridiculous, it was. I mean, we'd be thrown in the slammer if we walked about like that.
What was the slammer?
It was the guardhouse.
Did their slovenliness and lack of discipline make much difference when it came to fighting?
Well, you didn't take notice because you were busily defending yourself. I mean, it's every man for himself then. You didn't compare anybody. You was just more or less, well, look after yourself, Jack. Let's get out of it. But if you saw a mate in trouble, well, naturally, that's different.
Were there any other Allied troops apart from the Americans you were fighting alongside?
Alongside us, I think we had the Dutch Army then, parts of the Dutch Army, but I can't remember who they were.
Did you see much of the civilian population as you went through Belgium and Holland?
Oh, yes, all the time, poor devils. The refugees, yes, oh, shocking, it was terrible. Come along with wheelbarrows and bundles of clothing and a few possessions that belonged to them, valuable possessions they're carrying that the Jerrys never took all of them. It was terrible. Wherever you went, you saw columns and columns of refugees. They could be French, they could be Belgian, they could be Dutch. Or some, believe it or not, were Germans. German people, ordinary German people, which were good people when you got talking to them. Apart from the Nazis, of course.
How could you tell they were Germans, though?
Well, you see, we naturally took for granted that when we was in Belgium, they were Belgian people. When we was in Holland, naturally, we thought they was Dutch people. But when the bombing and all this business carrying on, well, naturally, we know we're in German soil, we took for granted that it was Germans.
Could you speak to any of the refugees?
Oh, yes, well, they was the first to speak to us. Hello, Tommy, good to see you, have you got a cigarette? That was always the conversation, have you got a cigarette, Tommy?
So they could speak some English then?
Oh, yes, broken English, yes, broken English.
Did they seem to be starved or well-fed?
Oh, no, it seemed to be hungry, very hungry. And especially the kiddies, which we felt sorry for. I mean, we had our emergency rations, we used to give them hard tack, like a tin of chocolate or a tin of bully, if we had it, bully beef. And that was very rare for ourselves, to tell you the truth.
Your chocolate came in tins, did it?
Yes, we had the tin chocolate. It was very hard tack. And most of us used to break it open and boil it up with water and make coffee out of it, or cocoa.
Did you go hungry yourself?
We were a bit peckish, but we was fed up with the hard tack all the time. bully beef and biscuits. But naturally, when you went through a town, we used to go on the scrounge, see if there's any grub in the cellars of the houses that were demolished. We used to make for the cellars because we knew full well that the people used to put the sides of bacon up the chimneys at the bottom in the cellars, and the wine and what have you. And more naturally, it was every man for himself.
Did you usually find stuff like that?
Oh, yes, yes, now and again, yes. And you used to sometimes come over the into the German border. We used to sometimes find in the German houses a cellar full of potatoes, full of veg, full of it. They had been robbing off the poor Dutch. So we used to load our vehicles up with the spuds and different stuff and take back to the Dutch people who we made friends with. Because we used to, most of us used to be, try and get shelter in the convents. The nuns used to look after us. I mean, this is skipping a few battles, naturally. But we found that it was very, very comforting, the nuns. They used to let us sleep in the nunnery on floors and what have you. And to repay them for their kindness, we used to try and get food for them.
Did you ever find anything more valuable in the houses?
Well, damn good furniture, I can tell you. Marvellous grand pianos. Goodness knows what. They're very, very rich, these people were. In this particular area, of course. But
which area was that?
This would be Lüneburg. After Nijmegen, we were making our way to Lüneburg. It seemed to be a very conservative place, Lüneburg.
How do you mean conservative?
Well, the property seemed to be very nice, very good, and the furniture massive, because we understood afterwards that it was more or less an officer's abode. Mostly German officers lived there and what have you. And then there's Lüneburg, and making our way on to Dresden then.
Now,
We had a big battle there at Osnabrück.
Did you ever come across a fifth column?
Well, I might have done, but it wasn't pointed out to us. We didn't know in those days. There was so much happening. So much happening, we really didn't know. I mean, after a battle, you'd sort of sort out a place to get your head down and get a bit of grub, and then wait for your orders from the sergeant major to see what was happening the following day, or during the rest period, after you had your rest period.
You were a regular. But did you have many militiamen with you?
Oh, yes, yes, quite good boys, a militia. Yes, they were good boys. But naturally, the youngsters, they used to hang on to us, well, naturally, to be guided by our experience. Because although they was trained, but they never, I mean, naturally, they wouldn't have our experience, not as regarding battle, but as regards of more or less taking, asking, what would you do now, what shall we do now, or follow me, and what have you. Militia were damn good boys.
Could they get promoted, or did they stay as gunners?
Oh, no, we all got promoted on the field. Oh, yes. I was promoted 2 or 3 times on the field, sergeant.
So you finished up the war as a sergeant, did you?
Yes. You see, as soon as your promotion on the field came, is when you sergeant, one of you got killed or anything, another one to take over, naturally.
What were the relations like between the officers and the men? Were they good or not?
I can't really say, because you never saw your officers much. I mean, It was either the back or the side of you. You just carried on, you and your little group, under a sergeant, just about six or seven of you, used to carry on together in a little group. And you used to have runners, what you call a runner, used to come to each group from the officers, or from your CEO, to give you different orders of what to do next, you see. Like to dig in, or carry on, or go to the flank, or rest up. We used to get the runners, but naturally, if you never got a runner and things were getting a bit hot, you didn't know what to do, well, you just carried on and used your own initiative.
Were the officers respected or were they despised?
Well, as a regular point of view, I mean, a regular soldier always respected a good officer, especially if he come up from the ranks, if you know what I mean. If he joined, I mean, well, that by that I'm saying a sergeant or an ordinary gunner or private worked his way up through the ranks to an officer, well, naturally, he was one of us, wasn't he?
So you preferred officers who'd come up from the ranks, did you?
Well, yes, I mean, there was more experience. But some officers were good. And some officers, well, naturally, they had to do their job. They was young. A lot of them were youngsters, the officers.
But did you come across officers who were bad?
More or less, I can't disclose, but in my peacetime service in India, yes, there was quite a few there.
In what way bad?
They'd been sent over to us from OCTU, Officers Training Unit, OCTU in England, to India. And there's only youngsters, 19 or 20. And I remember one night my mate was on guard and he shouted out to this visiting officer, orderly officer, who was supposed to visit the gun park guard. He shouted three times and he wouldn't answer and he shot him. And the reason he was shot is because he come across a gun park guard dressed in all white. Well, naturally white out there, you take for granted that he was a loose waller with come down from the Cuds, the hills.
A loose waller being a thief.
Pardon?
A loose waller being a thief.
Yeah, yes. And that was the only, we used to see more of our officers naturally then, during peacetime, than war, because it was everybody for themselves.
When you keep saying it was everybody for himself, do you mean that you were left to your own devices?
Yes, we were left to our own devices, yes.
Now, you were saying that you were at Nijmegen, at the Nijmegen crossing. What happened to you after that?
Well, after that, we was told to disperse. Apparently, we was pulling out because I understand that things were getting a bit too hot. We was pulled out of there. And then we went advancing up the river then and carrying on. But for the reason being, I can't remember or I don't know the purpose of us pulling out at that moment.
Did you ever see German planes?
Planes, yes. Snookers, oh dear, yes. Planes, yes. Terrible things.
Stukas?
Stukas, yes. They come screaming down at you and you just hit the dust and hope for the best. It's a terrible feeling. A funny feeling goes through your spine. Those screaming Stukas coming down at you.
Did they have many planes in the sky or was it the skies mostly dominated by the Allies?
Well, at that moment, at this particular moment, you're mostly dominated by the Allies at the moment, but there was one and two snookers now and then. Well, naturally, we used to see a few dogfights in the air. But we used to keep an eye on it to see who got shot down. And if it's a Jerry got shot down, if he was near us, we used to go over and try and rummage through and see what he's got on him.
What? Most, What did you find?
Well, we used to strip him of his papers and mostly his Lugers, because these Luger guns were the loveliest little revolver going. It was better than our 4.5s, what we used to have.
In what way?
Well, the Luger's an automatic. You put the cartridge, you load it in the handle, you see. And the Luger was a beautiful revolver, and most of our boys had one. We all had one each. I mean, if you never had one, we used to, every body we used to see, Jerry body, we used to turn him over to see if he got a Luger. And most of our boys, we all ended up with a Luger each.
Did you use them?
Oh, yes, definitely, yes.